Well, thanks everyone for coming. We appreciate it. So my name is Adam Connor, and I, along with Katie Harbath, my colleague, manage Facebook's politics and government team in our Washington, D.C. office. And as you know, 2012 is going to be hopefully a very exciting year in politics. We think it already has been. And we're really looking forward to having a discussion today and talking a little bit about what we think is important to think about in the presidential election and other elections, too. And so I think as we're having this conversation today, we encourage you to not just think about the presidential candidates, because a lot of what they're able to do is a function of their size and their money and their kind of reach. But a lot of the lessons and what we think are the truly powerful lessons about how social technologies can be used in politics are applicable beyond just the presidential level, down to local candidates and smaller candidates. And we think we're going to see a real explosion of that going forward. Am I the only one hearing a weird echo? Or is it just you hearing this echo?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay, well, we'll keep going. So the first thing we want to talk about is the title of our panel. And I think if you read the news these days and talks about the election, you see all sorts of headlines about social media's role in politics and how these things are changing and how this is such a revolution. But Katie and I were talking a couple of months ago when we were talking about doing this panel, and what we came to the conclusion was, you know, hasn't politics really always been social? I mean, isn't this kind of the fundamental building block of politics in America? I mean, so today we're going to talk to you about how there are three interconnected stories in politics. There's the voters, there's the candidates, and there are campaigns. And the candidates and campaigns are obviously interconnected, but they're actually kind of separate entities in the way we're going to talk about them today. So we talk about the voters, obviously, you know, people who show up at their polling places in the rain. You've got your candidates, you know, the politicians who are standing for office, and you have the campaigns, which are this apparatus to get those candidates elected by having voters vote for them. And candidates have really, they've always been social. You know, kind of at the very beginning of American politics and electoral politics, it was very much how many hands can you shake? How many people do you know? How do you really get that message out? But as the country grew and as our political system grew, there was a problem. And that problem was scale. Because it turns out it is impossible to shake every hand. Now, in lower level offices, you can shake enough hands to get elected to a state legislature or a city council. But at some point, there are just too many hands and you can't shake them all. You know, so Barack Obama got more than 69 million votes in 2008. He wasn't able to get all of those votes by shaking 69 million people's hands. It's actually just impossible. And so the fundamental question for a lot for the last 40, 50, 60, 70 years was, what do you do when you can't shake everybody's hands? Because I think particularly in an era of social connections, people wanted to shake hands and they were unable to do that. And so what happened was it gave rise to a couple of things. The first was that political insiders had a tremendous amount of power because the institutions and processes they created allowed them to have that power because you were unable to reach and not everyone was able to participate. So you saw a lot of conventions and smoke-filled back rooms and how political nominees were selected that way. And it gave the insiders who understood this process and had influence a great deal of power. The second thing that emerged over the last 60, 70, 80 years was mass communication. First in radio, and obviously the FDR presidency is a great example of that, and then television. And that fundamentally changed the way that you were able to communicate with a large audience. And television in particular really fundamentally reshaped politics. And in particular, we're going to talk about two ways that changed it. And in terms of campaign presence, there's two kinds of media in the world. There's earned media and there's paid media. So paid media is television commercials. And if any of you have ever lived through an election in a swing state, you've probably seen some. This is Dwight D. Eisenhower's 1952 commercial, Eisenhower Answers America. It was the first political television commercial. And it spawned many, many decades of television commercials for politics. And this is a picture of the Kennedy-Nixon 1960 presidential debate. It was the first televised presidential debate, and there's been a lot written about how that fundamentally shaped the idea of perceptions, because if you watched that debate on radio, you came away possibly thinking that Nixon won, whereas everybody who watched it on television saw a very poised and confident John F. Kennedy, while Richard Nixon didn't have a makeup guy, and he was sick, and he was sweating, and he was pale, and so the visuals all of a sudden became such a prominent thing. And these two things, paid media, media you earned and you bought on television, and earned media through media and press coverage, really became the fundamental building blocks of political campaigns because for the first time, you could reach all of the voters you needed to reach because you couldn't shake their hands. And so by the end of this, campaigns really became a function of being on television. They existed for two reasons. The first was to raise enough money to buy television advertising so that you could influence people. And the second was to earn television coverage. So this is a picture of Ronald Reagan doing what's called an airport rally. And in political campaigns in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s, what they would do is they would fly into an airport in a local media market. They would have an event at the airport. It would generate press coverage in that local media market. Then they would get back on their plane, they would fly to another media market in an airport, have another rally in an airport, and they would do 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of these a day to get separate television coverage in each of these media markets, earn that media coverage. And so at some point, these multi-million dollar campaigns really existed for half of this was just to be, or three-fourths of this was just to be on television. And that is because campaigns have one goal, and that goal is to win. Because when you win an election, you get to become president of the United States or whatever office it is. It's the system we have set up. The other thing that campaigns exist to do besides television and what they do through television is to influence voters. So this is a voter, maybe not a real voter, but it's a voter. And the goal for a political campaign and their interaction with a voter is to get that voter to vote. And I know that sounds like a fundamentally simple thing, but if any of you have ever worked on a political campaign, it's actually very difficult to get a human being to go on a Tuesday, stand in a line, and pull a lever. So you have to spend all of this time figuring out how to get that person to physically go and vote. So the campaigns really look at voters in four ways. They look at them as potential donors, so they can get money to fund their activities. They look at them for action, to make phone calls or knock on doors for their candidate. And at the end, and the most fundamental, they look at voters as a potential vote to get them to win their election. This is how a campaign sees a voter. This is a screenshot of my information from the voter file for the Democratic Party. And this is what I am to the Democratic Party or to any political campaign. I am a series of numbers and information that they can use to get me to go out and vote someday. And campaigns also see me not just as this number, but as this potential. There's all sorts of social science research done by social scientists that show that really, in order to get people out to vote, you know, the television ads and the narrative matter too, but the most effective things that drive targeted turnout among the people you want to vote are getting phone calls and getting people to knock on their door. So this entire apparatus is built around, you know, getting people to come in and help out and show up at a place and make phone calls to strangers or knock on doors in targeted neighborhoods to get the people you want out to vote. And that's a system that, candidly, hasn't changed very much in the last 40 or 50 years. We have improved the technologies that allow you to make phone calls or knock on doors, but these remain to this day the kind of fundamental building block of what political operatives call field. One of the effects of all of this, and all of you aware, is that today mass communication is now less effective than it used to be. Television advertisements are less effective, particularly when there are 5, 6, 7 of political campaign ads in the same television block. DVR and TiVo has really allowed you to skip through commercials. So, with this really explosion of TV ads and the lessening of mass communication, the question becomes, how do you reach voters today? One of the other things that has been happening in politics for a long time that is not new is that one of the most influential things in how a person determines to vote is what their friends and family are telling them. The conversations they're having about politics are on the water cooler or in a backyard or at a barbecue or things like that. Friends have always been influential. But friends being influential suffered the same problem as candidates, which was, how do you be influential at scale? How do I talk to my friends, all of my friends, if they live in different places, about who they can vote for? And for the first time, we think technology is evolving to allow that to happen, both for political campaigns, for candidates, and voters to really engage in the process at scale and in a way that is more efficient. Katie's going to talk a little bit about what our vision is for using the internet in elections in terms of not just Facebook but social technology. But I think a lot of what you've heard over the last couple of years goes something like this. You can use the internet to win elections. Step one, you use the internet. Step two, ? Step three, you win an election. And I think a lot of this has been, well, we know it could be important, but then you win, but what happens in that second part? How do we make that happen? What is the reality of a social campaign, of a social candidate, of a social voter? You know, how do we be social at scale and allow people who can't shake the hands of every single voter, allow them to communicate? And Katie's going to come talk a little bit about what we think is a social vision for politics.
So like what Adam mentioned is we're really moving away from the wisdom of crowds and people just necessarily searching for information or going on a website and knowing that things are popular but not necessarily knowing who those people are. And now with the advent with social networking, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or anything like that, we're really moving to the wisdom of friends. And every single part of a campaign can have a social aspect to it, can give people a way to know what their friends are doing and to encourage them to get more involved. So obviously any campaign starts with a candidate and the campaign. And as they start to do, whether it's earned media with the press, a lot of the press now is, you know, using Twitter and Facebook, where you know before a speech even starts or even during a speech how that event or that activity is being perceived. And more and more people are getting news from the web. You look at things like the Washington Post Social Reader and Yahoo that are being built on Facebook, where people are reading stories and their friends are able to see them. And it's really helping to spread that message. Whether it's events, I talked before, you know, before the event even starts or as it's going on, how people are going to react to it. People who are at events, they're sharing. Eventbrite is a great tool that's integrated with Facebook, where people can sign up for an event and share that with their friends and let them know that they're at that event, that they should be going. Checking in on Foursquare, sharing photos. No longer is an event just coming, showing up at the airport and hoping that it gets on the evening news. It's being covered in many different areas. And then obviously the internet too is connecting all of these things. And then as the campaign keeps going on, you know, you start getting up on TV. But with less and less people watching live TV now, you have a lot more people. We've seen with studies with Nielsen that people are much more likely to remember television commercials if they also see them on places like Facebook that have that social connection of telling you which of your friends have liked that candidate. You're probably far more likely to watch a video, watch a commercial, pay attention to a brand if a friend highly, highly recommends it versus if you just are getting it straight up from the brand and you're supposed to trust the message that they're sending to you. And then as campaigns keep moving on, you have, you know, phone banks. No longer do you have to try to get people to come down to headquarters, fill a two-hour time slot, and just start calling people on a piece of paper that they don't know. Now you have phone banking tools. Speaker Gingrich had this for a while on his website. People can log in with Facebook, and they can see which of their friends have made phone calls, or some tools even, I'm going to show you some screenshots, will ask you to call your friends. And so whether it's, and then even door knocking can start to ask you to go in a neighborhood and knock on the doors of people that you know versus strangers. Because, again, that friend's connection goes a really long way. And as those people are sharing those activities on places like Facebook, if their friends also support the candidate and are like, hey, I've got 5 minutes to make a phone call, or I've got some time to go knock on doors, and you'd rather do it as a group activity with friends than necessarily with a bunch of strangers. And then at the end of the day, that helps to get out votes. When you have people, Pew has found that Facebook users compared to other internet users or people not online are 57% more likely to persuade a friend or coworker to vote. That's really, really powerful. If on election day you can start to use social media tools and matching that up with the people you know have voted, so at 4 o'clock you can send a message to people, or if they log in, here are three of your friends who haven't gone and vote yet. Can you please give them a phone call? Can you please go knock on the door? Can you send them a message or an email and asking them to go vote? And the way that this kind of looks, you know, and what it looks like from the voter's perspective is here's our friend Max Power, who voted in the Arlington, the March 6th primary. But how did he get to this point? And if you go back to probably, you know, back to December, for a while he was living in Davenport, Iowa, and he's checking out all the different Republican presidential candidates. He's starting to meet people who are politically involved like me and starts to get messages on his Facebook wall and starts to share the information that he's getting. First, I think he decides that the Republicans really aren't his cup of tea, and so he likes President Obama's page. He starts trying to get information and sharing info from the White House's Facebook page about jobs numbers. And he has friends, like his friend Jordan, who are sending him messages about other candidates that they've been talking about that they might want to pay attention to. Max realizes he's not registered to vote, and he comes across American Crossroads' register to vote application tool, logs in with Facebook, where he can then pick his state, fill out all of the information, and download a PDF in order to send it in, because unfortunately a lot of these systems aren't digital yet. But he gets to see how many other people from the district or how many other people from where he lives have registered to vote. Now all of a sudden registering to vote has become a very social thing that you can do with your friends, or see the other number of people who have done it as well. Or take phone banking. I had mentioned before Speaker Gingrich's phone banking tool. President Obama has the same thing, where someone goes and makes phone calls. They can log in with Facebook if they'd like. Again, they give access to the campaign so that they can know who his friends are, what his likes and interests are, and start building up a profile of who their online supporters are who are taking actions. And then he can share that link with all of his friends. And on average, every Facebook user has about 130 friends. So very quickly, even if he only gets two or three of his friends to help make phone calls, those are two or three people that the campaign didn't necessarily have to recruit on their own. And so if you look at that at scale, you can very quickly get a lot of people taking action for you. We saw this happen in the Scott Brown Senate campaign in 2010 when I was at the NRSC. There were so many people who nationally wanted to help him in Massachusetts. So what did the campaign do? It was very smart, and you could do this with any campaign, is show people their friends in Massachusetts or allow them to make phone calls into Massachusetts, even if they live in Washington State. They were able to harness the national energy around his special election to really help get out the vote in Massachusetts using a lot of online tools such as this one. I mentioned news. More and more people are getting their news from the internet, and even though cable TV is still very powerful and is still a big way that people also get their news, the reporters, the producers, the anchors, the people who are on those cable TV shows are using social media to get story ideas. So it's all interconnected. And if you have something like the Washington Post Social Reader, no longer on your website is having a Facebook application just purely around advocacy or trying to get them to take some big action, whether it's like knocking on doors or making phone calls. It can be as simple as reading stories. So for what the Washington Post did for their application, you could do for your website. Where imagine if now someone is on mittromney.com and they can log in with Facebook, and when anytime anybody is reading an article, a blog post, a research piece, that it is sharing with their friends on Facebook that they are reading this. And it helps. We have found that with everyone, as they start building in these timeline applications, it's driving a lot more traffic back to their site. And it's really creating this cycle of people finding information, sharing it with friends, and then driving them back to a website in a way that we've never really seen before. As the campaign keeps going on, Max Powers also just shares information, whether it's clicking the like button or the share button on President Obama's site, and is able to have a conversation with friends in the comment section of that Facebook post. He can also help encourage people to donate. When he has donated, President Obama's campaign asked him to share that on Facebook. Ron Paul's campaign does something similar. After somebody donates for their money bomb, they ask them to share it, and they provide a photo to say that I donated to Ron Paul's money bomb campaign. Click here to do so as well. And we have found there was an interesting story that came out yesterday about a study that people are much more likely to judge you by the photos and images they see on your Facebook page than necessarily what you say. Imagery is a huge, huge thing, more so even with our new timeline design, that people are spending more time looking at those images, and the more that you can be making it very easy for people to share. You can't, I know as a campaign, you really want to ask everyone for as much information as possible right away, but that really hurts how much people are sharing and interacting with your campaign. So if you can use things that they're already used to doing, such as installing Facebook applications or just hitting that retweet button, or even now with Pinterest, having them pin an image, any of those things are all so interconnected, it just helps to build up the amount of chatter and conversation happening around your campaign on all of these different platforms. Oops, let me go back. You also have the candidates who are sharing information off of their Facebook pages. So President Obama does a lot of, you'll notice all of them have photos or some sort of imagery to go with it. And you have some candidates who post themselves, others who they need to have their, they have help from their campaign staff. And the biggest thing is we don't necessarily expect a candidate to be doing it themselves all the time, but it's important to have an authentic voice. And it's important to have buy-in from the top and making sure that your candidate knows what is happening on Facebook. Speaker Boehner checks his Facebook page every single day, even though he's not necessarily posting himself. And so having those conversations are a really great way. And I was at a panel yesterday where something really resonated with me. If you're going to ask somebody to do something for you on Facebook, on your website, on Twitter, I don't care where it is, if you're going to ask them to take action, you need to give them a reward for that action. Whether it's additional content, whether it's answering their question, just letting them know that you're listening or that you're taking their input in terms of what you're talking about, whether it's an issue or if you're asking them to submit concerns that they have, you need to give them a reward for that. Don't just assume that they're going to take action for you and continually do that if they don't get anything in return. Finally, we're getting close to Election Day. While people are door knocking, they are probably sharing, you know, that they're doing it with their friends. And it can be a way to help recruit people. Putting something up on Facebook. Have you ever done it? You know, you might not, you can do it for door knocking, but think about if you've ever done it where it's like, hey, I'm going to go see this movie or I'm going to go do this. Does anyone want to join? It's a much more scalable way to find friends who want to help you do something than trying to go one by one. You hear Speaker Gingrich all the time on the campaign trail. There were two stories out today about how he's encouraging people to go on Facebook and be talking about gas prices or be talking about encouraging people to vote for his campaign. He's really trying to use social media to help keep his campaign going, even though they're not as well-funded as other candidates. And then at the end of the day, Max voted. And he shared with his friends right away because, as you can tell, he's an enthusiastic person, so he probably wouldn't have voted right at 7 a.m., that he shared it. And we found we had, 12 million people click the I voted button in 2010? The more people that click that and share with their friends, it can help just to remind people, oh, yeah, I need to go vote today, especially during a primary. A lot of people always know the November election day, but if there's a primary going on, even in our office, it was used during the Virginia primary to help remind our coworkers to go out and vote that day. And then Adam had mentioned to think beyond the presidential campaign, which is really, really important because I think one place, a place where this can be really powerful is at those local elections. Sam Cooker, I don't know how to correctly pronounce his last name, beat out a two-term incumbent in Rapid City, South Dakota, using Facebook for his election. He was using Facebook advertising. He created a page. He was posting himself. He was sharing photos from the road. He did a really, really good job of using this to help build up support. Another favorite of mine is Sean Duffy from Wisconsin last cycle. He was posting to Facebook himself. He was doing videos. He was doing photos. He was sharing stuff about his family. It was just very personal, and you could tell it was the candidate, and they were using it even if they didn't have a lot of money or weren't really given much of a shot of winning. To help build up that base so that that way it was there. When the tipping point came and the polls started to follow and the press started to follow, they already had this base of volunteers to help get out the vote and help be spreading that message as much as possible. Events are also very key. And I highly encourage you to think of events not only as in-person activities, but also things that can happen online. And so you may create an event on Facebook and encourage people to attend. People will share that they're asking them to share and try to get their friends to attend an event can work really well. But then also think about live streaming those events and be taking questions, live streaming on your Facebook page, and be taking questions both from people in the audience and from people on Facebook. And it can immediately become a way where you're taking those offline actions and combining it with online actions to help reach even more people who maybe wanted to watch but couldn't get off of work or couldn't find a babysitter. And so it's another way for them to be able to, or they'll watch it later, even if they can't watch it live. All of those add up to having a much better campaign, even if on their own they may seem like not very much. To a campaign, what does this all mean? So you start to think about this at scale. When you have people installing Facebook applications, our new timeline ones are asking for these permissions, users are opting in to let you know what their likes and interests are, their email address, and who their friends are. And campaigns can start to take this information, and it's so much more valuable because it's user opt-in, and take this information and start to put together reports where they'll also have things like this I had mentioned before about how you, with a phone banking system, you can ask people to call their friends. So they're not calling strangers, they're calling people that they know. And as people are installing these applications, the campaign can start to put together reports of not only how many phone calls were made and by how many people that day, but they can start to see how many people started making phone calls because a friend asked them. And then those people that made phone calls, how many friends do they have in other swing states? Can we start to ask somebody who's taking action in Wisconsin, has been making phone calls, can we then also ask them to go call, you know, their five friends in Ohio, their two friends in Florida, and start putting together, figuring out how can we use our online army to really start to reach out to people in other states and help to spread that message where we don't necessarily have to put campaign staff or additional funds behind it. Campaigns will also use insights, whether it's their Facebook insights, their Google Analytics, whatever they're using, to start to see what content is resonating the most with people, what is getting the most reach, what is getting shared the most, where is the most engagement, so that they can start tailoring their posts and their action and what they're asking people to do on Facebook based upon what they've seen the users want to do. And then they can also do this with all those likes and interests and stuff that they were getting from users. They can start to put together an idea, not only demographically of who these folks are, but additional pages that they might like, the books that they're reading, the music that they're listening to, and can start to use that to perhaps not only be doing online ad targeting, but both President Obama and Mitt Romney have been creating Spotify playlists. So maybe they start creating Spotify playlists of the different music that their friends like or that their users like. Ask their users for what sort of music they'd like to hear in the campaign trail. A lot of different ways to make a campaign social and really to give people an interaction with the candidate beyond just necessarily the issues in a way that really humanizes them. And where we're moving to and the way President Obama's campaign is really starting to lay it out, I find is really interesting because what they are building is a way to what no longer just saying share this with your friends. It's going to be share this with your friends, your four Facebook friends in a crucial swing district. And it's going to be this specific issue because we know that in that district, a lot of people are talking about the economy. So let's have you share information about the president's jobs plan with those four friends in a district rather than just blankly saying share this with all of your friends. And with that, we'd love to take any questions that you all have. And I should also say thank you for coming all the way up here. I know this is really far away, so Adam and I really, really appreciate it.
Does everybody at Facebook get to choose the red or the blue?
Well, we do this so you can more easily distinguish our partisan background.
Yeah.
Color code things for easier.
Yeah. Your political color every day.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
Not every day, but certainly on certain
when we do something like this.
You mentioned things like Spotify and other things to humanize candidates. What are some other examples that you've seen that have been effective?
You're starting to see like Mrs. Romney using Pinterest. That's another big one that we've seen some people do. And then I think that they're still sort of exploring, but I could see with Hulu, people picking their favorite television shows. Yeah. Sharing what they're watching.
You know, I would say that we recently launched our new Facebook pages, which include that feature called Timeline, which allows people to kind of, candidates to really share some of their personal history. So, you know, Mitt Romney, for instance, had this really cute photo of him and his father who was born. Barack Obama got a lot of press for putting a picture of his birth certificate and made in the USA when he was born. But also, I think there's a human interest there. So some of the things that really jumped out at me in President Obama's kind of history and timeline was in 2004, they put that was the last when he and Michelle Obama made their last student loan payment, which is like a kind of a crazy thing to think that 4 years later he was president of the United States, but 4 years before he was still paying off his student loan. So little things like that give you access to and I think help humanize a candidate because at the end of the day, these candidates are people too, and a lot of the way we relate to them is very much in a personal way, whether it's, you know, the music or their background or their history. And kind
you'll
of
see, too, like, things that they are reading. So Senator John Cornyn posts on his own all the time, and he'll post stuff asking people what they think about the Grammys, or how he hates how he goes to Costco, and he ends up buying something he didn't intend to buy from Costco. Or you have Congressman Bob Latta, I know, in the House, uses like the Washington or the Wall Street Journal social reader. So he's sharing the news articles that they find interesting throughout the day, in addition to just what they're doing for their what votes they're taking or what they might be doing in the district.
Yeah, and I think the other thing I just add is you see a really interesting phenomenon once people are elected in office, because I think at least Katie and I have a very D.C.-centric perspective, but you know, in this economy, people are less able, for instance, to take that annual summer trip to D.C. and visit their congressman and see the sights. So there's a way to kind of let constituents know the work they're doing in Washington, even if they can't come out and visit.
I know that Facebook launches the pages timeline, last week.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. What opportunities does that offer a lot of advocacy groups and government organizations?
I think, I'm obsessed with infographics, and I know that people kind of land one side or the other about infographics and their power. But advocacy groups and government agencies or whatever that is, you have a wealth of information. And you probably have a specialty. So if you might be a healthcare advocacy organization or one about something else, you probably have a lot of data that there are people who are online who are talking about this issue that really want. So that can be something that you offer of value with the new timeline design. It's also just a great way to showcase the history of your organization. Remind people of some of the fights that you won or, you know, things that you were working on that you can really show in pictorial format. To show the history of what you've done.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the government agency side, I think there's just a great and rich history for a lot of government agencies or institutions. So we worked with the U.S. military to help them pull out the kind of past history on their new Facebook page and the timeline. And it was really, you know, really interesting to see kind of, you know, them put up historic photos and videos and the really kind of rich history of institutions. And I think actually, you know, a candidate can only be so old, you know, they can only go back some time. But these institutions, these agencies, these political parties, they have an even longer and richer history. And so it really does give people an opportunity to showcase, I think, very far back.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't, but that's candidly because it's so new. But we expect that that'll be something that we're really excited to see in the future.
So I think it could definitely be just the reading that type of information. If they do things where perhaps it's, you know, helping people search for jobs partnership, or if it might be a healthcare one, it may be stuff, anything that, there it could be Katie is searching for a job here.
I think the other things like the Federal Register, which they've taken steps to make a little bit more interesting, but I think Todd Parks, just recently been appointed the new CIO, or CTO, I forget which it is. CTO of the United States. He's come over from HHS, where they did some really fascinating things there, launching healthcare.gov and things. So I think there's a huge opportunity, and I think a lot of what the administration has done over the last few years in technology is really get their backends in place and really get their data systems to talk to each other and have this understanding and give them that platform to then build on top of.
They can also use it to really surface, because a lot of these government agency websites, again, have so much information. And if you're using these to help surface, like, what's the most popular content being read or shared to people, we found, you know, the Washington Post social reader has that too, where you log in and you see what the most popular stories are. It can help people find the information that they might not have otherwise known to look for.
Yeah, I think that's a great point too. You know, so your average government website, for instance, you know, there are going to be certain things people are there to look for. So if you go to travel.gov, for instance, you're probably there to learn about passports and visa information, right? Or if you go to your Members of Congress website, you know, you're probably there to look for contact information about tours or Naval Academy thing. So, you know, understanding how you can take advantage of what people are already looking for and prioritize that and let people find it and share it easier.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming. Adam and I will be up here if you have any questions. But again, we really appreciate you making the trek all the way up here, and we hope you found it helpful.
Yeah. Enjoy South by Southwest.